Bunkus. Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. I'm about to throw to a recorded interview that I did with Jorge Masvidal, and I've got Call Me Maybe as the setup for it. I'm thrilled that I taped this interview and that it wasn't live, because that would have been a horrific way to bring him in on it. Go ahead. Jorge.
Call me maybe.
Please ignore the game bread, Jorge Masvidal. Wait till you hear the literal way that this interview starts, because it's going to be don't play Call Me Maybe under it. So yeah, yesterday I had a chance to catch up with Gamebred. He's somebody who I've spoken with before. He is a, let's say, very unfiltered guy. So we had to filter him with swears, with a mute button. Shout out to Maria Saint-Aubin, who spent an hour last night working on editing this interview so that our lazy member, Vic and Palladian, could, you know, have his little nappy time. His little
whatever
he did last night. He's like, oh, I got to get the Call Me Maybe.
We get it. You have a girlfriend now.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Ever since Vic's got a girlfriend, it's like, oh, you don't have a... Poor Vic is sweating after that one. It's a sweat show right now. Oh, boy. Just leaking after you put him on blast for having a girlfriend. But yes, I got a chance to speak with UFC fighter Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. Here it is.
It's Gamebred. It's Jorge Masvidal gearing up. You know it's going to be good. It's UFC 272, the main event, him and Colby Covington. You ready to break a face?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to break a face, a couple ribs. I definitely want to break his eye orbital. And those fake-ass veneers he's got going on, they're rubbing me the wrong way. I don't know if it's doing the same emotion out of you, but I see those fake-ass veneers. I'm like, man, I really want to punch him in, man. I want to curve stomp this dude. But there's no curves in the UFC, so I just have to replace it with my knee.
Yeah, hey, listen, I'm good with that. It's got to be a better knee than you tried to land in WWE, though. It's got to be better than that one. This one's got to be clean. This one's got to be flush.
This is going to be the type of knee that Monday morning he's still in ER, in critical condition. That's my goal, man. That's my one and only goal, really, is to leave him in there. And, you know, and the good part, the best part about this is because I know so much about this coward. Come Monday, when he wakes up in the ER, he's going to be by himself. And then it's really going to hit him like, man, me being such a piece of shit that so many people have led to this. Because I know his dad. His dad's not a bad dude, man. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really stand by his son's antics, you know. And that's got to hurt that even your own dad don't f***ing f*** with you, you know.
Yeah, okay, so this is what I want to get into, though, is because, like, you two have a history, right? And when I was researching for this fight and getting ready to talk to you, I kept, like, looking through stuff. I'm like, hey, what's already been done, right? Because I don't want to hit all the stuff that everybody's already said, and I want this to feel just like a natural, hey, what's up with this stuff? I've seen quotes from you going after Diaz. I've seen quotes where, you know, you're talking all kinds of things about all kinds of people, and I haven't seen as much from this fight as from times before. Now I'm talking to you, and I feel that, like, real animosity. I feel you kind of, like, already honing in on that zone, that Gamebred zone of I'm going to smash this guy. But I wonder if there was any part of you where, hey, this has been a little bit different than fights in the past because of the history, the personal, you know, at one point I think you guys were friends.
Yeah, at one point this guy lived in my room in my house for 9 months, ate off my plate because he had a broken hand. He was just coming off the amateur scene, so he wasn't making shit for fighting, so he had absolutely no money. And all he was doing was living off my roof, eating my food, all documented. There's some video and shit for the world to see. And he said it numerous times in interviews how I'm his best friend, how I helped him get here, how he wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me because I mentored him to his broken hand. So while he had that broken hand and he came to live with me, about 6 months later, he starts training and he re-breaks his hand in training. And so this coward owes me so much, man. I'm the one to talk to him, but he'd be crying at night reading comments about fucking people complaining about his style. Like, man, you can't worry about what people that you don't know are saying about you, but you can't be that sensitive in the sport, you know? And all of a sudden, this guy wants to project on everybody and call everybody virgins, snowflakes, and nerds. Like, bro, that's literally you, man.
So you feel like he's fake, that all this is fake?
I don't feel like he's fake. He said it himself. It's a persona. Because the UFC was going to cut him, so he had to insult the whole country of Brazil, and he had to make fun of Amanda Nunes. Why is he talking about Joanna, the 115 champion? Why is he talking about Valentina? Why is he talking about Amanda? Why is he talking about John Jones? Why is he talking about every guy that wins a belt? When Habib won the belt, why is he talking shit about him? It's everybody that wins a belt. This guy wants to take a percentage of their shine. Instead of making his light brighter to shine, no, he wants to try to dim people's lights. So we know he's a fake. He said it himself numerous times. He wouldn't have done this if the UFC wasn't threatening to cut him, which is just a sob story for people to be like, aw. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for this charlatan.
Okay, so the rest of us, like the rest of the world, sees him as a guy who's trying to promote himself, right? And that he's picked this lane, and he's decided that he's going to try and do the most outrageous stuff to try and get attention. No matter what it is, you just said it. He'll put anybody's name in his mouth at any given time. He'll do whatever it takes for people to get negative attention. He's the ultimate, hey, no press is bad press guy. But what is it about the two of you? Like, where does that fracture with the two of you? Because I can see how that rubs other people the wrong way. But if it's like he's somebody you know and you guys have been together, you've been friends, he's been eating off your plate, as you said, somebody that you mentored, where does the breaking point come with you? Like, what changed between your guys' relationship where now you're like, I want to smash this guy's veneers off his teeth?
So my coach coached him from amateur all the way to him winning that fake-ass interim belt against RDA. He was in his corner, and so was I. My coach, they had a handshake deal, same as me, 5% of the fights, you know. So he finally earned a little bit of coin for the first time in his career, won this interim belt, owed my coach $12,500. Guess how much he paid him off that money? $0. Since that happened and it went on, it was like month one, month two, month three, month four. He's like, he's never going to pay my coach. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take a bat and just fucking hit him in the neck. And that's it, you know, because since he's on some street shit where you don't want to pay people, well, I don't want to be on some street shit too. Mm-hmm. My coach pleaded with me, begged me, said, man, I promise you the universe and God will put you in the ring with him and you'll get to beat his ass in front of the world and you'll get to make a lot of money for it. So don't do that. And I said, okay, we shook on it. And here we are now. I'm days away from putting this guy in an ER for the world to see, you know. That was the start of it, you know. And then at that time, I wasn't saying anything about this public because I was like, I want to fight this guy, but we don't have to go public about it. And I was never planning on saying all the shit that he had done until he started coming out with all these crazy allegations, as I knew he would, talking about my children every chance he gets, talking about this and that, about my religion, you know. So to me, it's like, man, we don't need this sport for the future generation seeing this type of promotion and thinking it's cool, because it's really not, you know. Derek Lewis and Bam Bam just put on a hell of a fight. And leading up to it, I thought their fucking marketing was genius, the way they were going at each other and just, like, laughable and everything. And then they get in and they're trying to murder each other. I will pay top dollar again to see those two fight. I don't care what the result is. It shows you, like, you don't have to talk about a home nation. You don't have to talk about your opponent's religion, about their kids, about their freaking wives. Why are you talking about Dustin Poirier's wife? Why the fuck are you talking about her, you know? Mm-hmm. Dustin's not even in your weight class. He's so pathetic, man. I need to do this for the universe, man, so the future generations don't grow up thinking this is what you got to be in any shape or form, you know?
Yo, so it sounds like to me that you mentored this guy, you took him under your wing, and you feel like he betrayed your trust, like you vouch for him. Like you put it out there like, hey, this is a guy that knows Jorge Masvidal, and so he's attached to your name. And that when he goes out and comports himself a certain way, that has reflected on you, and that has made it even more personal.
In this game, nothing's personal, my brother. I want to first say that. Uh-huh. This is about as close as it gets to personal, but in this game, to me, since I got in this game at the young age of 18 years old, I knew that friends or not having friends, enemies, foes, none of this would be personal to me, because on the day of the fight, my emotions have to stay in check, and it's just another body. It's just another face that had a training camp to it. I dislike this guy more than the next, and I really pray that the referee, on the way to breaking me off of him, slips on the banana peel and I land some extra shots, you know. But still, it's not nothing personal, you know. It's just another scumbag that I have to take care of. And there's plenty of scumbags in my sport that I've taken care of already.
Yeah, you feel like it's the same for him, though? Like, you think that it's going to be... Because if I'm him, the way that you're putting this, that maybe there's, like, a big brother complex and that maybe it's going to be personal for him and that's something you can take advantage of.
Definitely going to be a big brother complex, you know, because though he was living at my house and eating at my food, he was a do boy. Mm-hmm. Hey, go to the store, grab me some paper so I could roll up. Hey, do this. Hey, wash my clothes, do the laundry. You know, so he has that big brother complex. But more than that, something that's really on the back of his head, and it hurts him that I even know this, is that he's a huge gambling degenerate, and he owes a lot of money to South Florida loan sharks. And some of them are the wrong people to owe money to. And guess what, man? He needs money. Because he doesn't make pay-per-views. He doesn't get good money at the UFC. So what do you think is going to happen with this clown if he doesn't pay up that money? You know, he's got all this stress winding up, you know. So when you see him in interviews and he's wearing, like, glasses or covering up his face, that means he has mat herpes, and he just broke out with the mat herpes. Mm. And what is mat herpes? It's something that you get on the mat. It's like a dirty funk. It's like when dirty people have it. You could Google numerous pictures of him having the outbreaks and stuff. So that comes with his nervousness. So when he gets, like, and the stress gets to him, it'll cause mad herpes to break out. There's a lot of people that have this. I'm not making fun of people that have mad herpes. I'm just making fun of Kobe's You know, so all that stress is really piling up on him. And now on top of that, he knows that to get over this hump and be able to pay all these loan sharks, the debt, and this corner that he's talked himself into, he has to go through me. So the stress is just piling up on a fucking massive level. And I'm seeing a meltdown. He's actually, I don't even know if he makes it to the fight, man, because I know a lot of people in this camp, you know, and he hates to hear that too, because obviously he's in my city, Miami. Mm-hmm. I know everything there is, you know. This guy's like trying to almost pull out of the fight. So if he didn't make it March 5th, I wouldn't be surprised, man.
Again, yeah, UFC 272, Masvidal Covington. I hope it happens. I hope it happens. I think it's going to be a good fight. The only fear is whatever. The only fear for anybody is the fear that always happens with fights where there's a wrestler, right? Because I feel like what you're saying is you think you have the mental advantage. That seems pretty clear. You sound confident right now. You seem clear. You seem good. And it's pretty obvious that you're going to like this fight on the feet. How do you feel like you think that he's going to just try to take this to the ground? Like, what do you think that his strategy is? What are you guys preparing for? What do you see his strategy being going into this fight?
Him throwing big bombs in the feet like he always does, way ahead of place, way ahead of range, way ahead of timing, and then shooting him for a takedown with everything he has to create the scramble. Mm-hmm. And just trying to do that as much as he can, hoping that he could wear me out. But as a wrestler, I've grown a lot. And to give some credit to Usman, in those camps that I was getting ready for Usman, I think it was very apparent. Like, I'm not an easy guy to hold down, even on 6 day notice with 20 pounds of cut. I'm not a guy that you're just gonna hold down. My will's not gonna. Even if somebody's superiorly technical, better than me, I just don't get held down. It's not gonna happen, you know. I'm not gonna just roll over for anybody and get submitted or just be on my back and be content there. I'm gonna make it a fight. Even if I'm on my back, I'm elbowing you, I'm punching you, I'm making space, I'm getting back up to my feet, I'm getting back in your face, and that's what really worries him, because he knows that when we're both tired, when we're both at E, I'm still gunning for you, man. I'm trying to break your face. I got to give you credit, bro. That's an ability that you got to sniff crotches. I can never be that guy. I want to sniff no man's crotch. I want to knock you the fuck out.
Yeah. Hey, so I want to go back to what you said, though, about how he promotes a fight and how he feels like he needs to promote a fight. And that's by, you know, referencing wives or girlfriends and family and children. And usually those things have always been kind of off limits. And then, like, the McGregor-Mayweather stuff happened, right, where they promoted that fight for so long and they had those weird interactions, and all of a sudden Conor seemed to change the game a little bit in terms of what was going to be said at a podium. Like, you want to talk about those things, all those check marks you hit, Nick, don't talk about religion, don't talk about families, don't talk about kids, don't talk about parents. And he did all that stuff. And now it kind of feels like Covington has taken that and in the Conor void, tried to be the same thing without being the same star as Conor. But where do you see that line? Because you are a master promoter. You are a guy that people, they don't just want to see you fight. They want to hear you talk. What do you think it is that makes a good promoter versus somebody who is, yeah, jumping that line and making this where, hey, you have now done something where other fighters, it is now a bad look on all of you?
You know, I mean, basically, you took the words out of my mouth, my brother. At the end, to make something very clear, people are not stupid. People watching this is not like a fake thing where the outcome is already determined. No, two men are going to get in there. One man, at least in this situation, is going to get in there, and we're going to fight. There's going to be blows exchanged. There's going to be positions exchanged. A lot of sweat, a lot of attrition, a lot of blood. Many things happen in the fight. You don't need to talk about somebody's wife because you're not fighting my wife. You don't need to talk about somebody's kids. My kids have nothing to do with this. And a lot of people see that crap and they just don't relate with it. Mayweather and McGregor, you know, I mean, McGregor should just stick to selling cheap whiskey. You know, it worked for him as far as pay-per-view numbers, but at the same time, you know, like when he was talking about Dustin's wife and he's on the fucking floor in crutches and he's headed to the ER for like 6 weeks because he has a broken foot. Does it make sense if you sold more pay-per-views but you talked about somebody's wife? To me, it doesn't, you know. And I think a lot more people relate with me than a lot of people relate with that. Like, man, you're literally, your foot's broken. You're on the ground like a fucking dog that just got shot and about to get killed. And you're talking about somebody's wife? That's how pathetic you are. Your wife's in my DMs. Like, you're so fucking pathetic, man. You're such a fucking rat coward for doing stupid shit like that, you know. And, man, a lot of people have wives, a lot of people have children, a lot of people just have family, and they know it's like, bro, this has nothing to do with the sport. You guys are already about to fight. Why do you have to even bring that into consideration, you know? And I think for the most part, I want to say a good majority of the world agrees with me, but what I don't want to happen in this situation is for the younger generation that might be slightly misguided because they're young to think that that's the way to promote. No. You want to come at the opponent you're fighting, f***ing do it, bro. Shit all over him and his technique and his speed and his skill set. and then go out there and actually fight, you know, because that's what people really want to see. You don't have to involve nobody's wife, mm-hmm. religion.
Do you feel like there's added pressure on you knowing that if he wins this fight, it's another step towards a world where there could be more of that? There could be more promotion in that style.
Not out of pressure, man. I'm just a universe and God's vessel into not that style of promotion. So there's no pressure on me. I feel like, man, everything is just going according to plan, my brother. Everything is going right. You know, all I got to get in there and do is have fun, you know, because that's initially when I got into fighting. There was a lot of things not going right in my life, and it was, yeah, my only way to make an income, you know. But at the same time, it was the funnest thing I had done in my life. Guess what? It's about to be 20 years later as a professional. And you could see my record on Sherdog. Wow. You could see my MMA Junkie. I'm anywhere in about just months now. I'll be 20 years in this game, my brother, of having fought the best guys that I possibly could at every stage of my career. So I'm not trying to say I was fighting world champions when I had 4 or 5 fights, but I was fighting the best guy I possibly could, the 8-8 guy. I mean, the 8-0 guy, guys like Joe Lauzon, guys like freaking so many guys that were like future UFC fighters, Hall of Famers, things like that. I was fighting them on my way up. So I've always enjoyed competition and at the highest ceiling that I possibly could achieve at that time, you know? Mm-hmm. So when I was like, I had under 10 fights, I was fighting the guys in the region that were the best guys. And I love it, man. And I still love it to this day. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who I'm fighting. That's why I say it's never personal. It's always, to me, I love fighting more than anything. So I just got to get in and have fun, man, you know?
Yeah. Hey, man, no one can ever poke holes at the resume. It's impossible to do it. It's always great getting to chat with you. And, yeah, obviously we're pulling for you, man. I hope you get exactly what you wish for. I hope that you knock him out. Jorge Masvidal, again.
Not just knock him out, my brother.
ER.
The plan is ER on Monday morning, critical condition, the headlines read. He wakes up, nobody's around him, and then just maybe then he starts to sink and everything. He goes, man, I've been a person to everybody, and that's why nobody's here now while I'm in this ER bed, you know. So that's definitely something that I want to do to this guy.
March 5th. March 5th, everybody. Get the pay-per-views.
Brother.
Jorge Masvidal.
Nothing but violence.
Be well, man.
Hey, always a pleasure, my brother. God bless, man.
There he is, Game Bread, Jorge Masvidal. So, yeah.
That was awesome. Oh, my God.
Here is my one issue with that interview. That fight is still a week away. I want that fight now.
Play,
I want to watch
every
it
day.
On this next break. I want to play that interview again next Friday leading into Saturday's fight. Man. Woo! Fired up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Want to run through a brick wall?
I just came out of that interview thinking, I don't think Ariel Helwani could do that as good, you know? It's probably not as good at this.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah. If I just imagine how good I'd be if I just got to, you know, only focus on the fight game instead of pretending to know about baseball and pretending to watch Knicks games and only watch
the Bills.
UFC. If I could just focus on Bills. Please.
Don't say it
like
that.
Let's be honest. The biggest story is Ariel's broke lately. Pro wrestling. Like,
right.
He's not even...
Not even real.
Yeah.
Not even real stuff.
Maybe we'll bring him on next Friday. And
yeah,
we'll try
you should.
To tee up this UFC event. And he'll just be like, whoa, you know the thing about Brock Lesnar.
All I'm saying is, if old JD got to focus on one sport, combat sports, would he be 10 times Ariel Helwani? 15 times Ariel Helwani? That's really the only question. So, Blake.
It would be the broadcasting equivalent of, hey, ER Monday morning, critical condition, headline
yes,
read.
I agree. So, I think you have something to chew on that's Masvidal related.
I do. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
You know, I think Masvidal would have liked for this to be something Colby Covington can no longer chew on as of next week with the teeth out. But no. So, in setting up for that interview, and obviously, Ailish and I, the timing just didn't work out. I was on the Will Lou show while you were doing that. So thank you, JD, for doing
Yay.
That.
Yay, way to go, JD.
Without us.
No problem.
Yeah,
it
was really good. But in prepping for it...
Ailish actually snapped at me. She said, Ailish, we can tape Jorge Masvidal. He's agreed to do this. Daniele's booked him for this. She freaked out. She threw stuff. She's like, you know that's my nappy nap time! And then stormed out of the room. Poor Daniela
yes,
and I just left.
That sounds just like me. That sounds very accurate. You're
oh,
right.
I wish we could mic up Daniela. He'd tell the truth, yeah. But unfortunately...
No, it conflicted with Bandit's third lunch of the day. So
who's going to
feed her? So in prepping for this, you know, this is a pretty big welterweight fight, right? And you go through the welterweight division and what this fight means. And Kamaru Usman has beaten Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington twice each. We know that Usman's next fight is going to be against Leon Edwards. We don't know when that's going to be yet. You can look at the top of the division with a Gilbert Burns or a Bilal Muhammad. But, you know, Colby's the number one ranked welterweight contender and Masvidal's at number six. I don't think either of these guys were close enough in the Usman, in their most recent Usman fight, to have a real case for a short-term title shot. However, you look at the division, and the winner of this fight is going to look like the second-best guy in the division. So the something to chew on here is I went back through UFC history. There have been 15 trilogies in UFC history. Only two have had a 2-0 start before the third fight. So Masvidal or Colby winning this fight and then playing their way into another shot at Usman would be very rare. So brings up the question is, and JD, I know you have a longer-term relationship with Masvidal, and you're a big fan of his. So say Masvidal wins this fight. He's 37 years old. He's probably not getting a third crack at Usman. If you're Masvidal, you win this fight, what is next for you? Are you a big payday fighter? Do you yes. try to make the BMF title something of a, hey, this is the intercontinental title of the welterweight division? Are you kind of just crossing your fingers that, like, hey, maybe Leon Edwards beats Usman, and then I'm back in the mix for the title? And you can answer this from the Colby perspective, too, because, again, he's even higher up the rankings. But what is the winner of this fight thinking their next 18 months looks like?
Two different things. So Colby wins this fight, and he's positioned himself back for a title shot.
Okay.
I actually think Colby is too radioactive to build himself as a promoter outside of the UFC right now. I think that the only way that this kind of antics, or the only way that it's even borderline acceptable, is if you're successful. So if you lose to Jorge Masvidal and he clowns on you and the world clowns on you, I actually believe that Covington might have to pivot a bit in terms of the way that he sells himself as a fighter. There are massive stakes for Colby Covington and the way that he has branded himself over the last couple of years. If he wins, to me, he's back in that mix. He actually does get the trilogy shot, because the first fight with Usman is the most competitive fight that we have seen with Kamaru, and that is going to be the way that you can sell this comeback. He got clowned last time, but this time around, he's always going to have that one that he can point to. He'll probably get it. He might not be the first to get it, but he'll probably get it. There's at least a pathway to get it. I don't think that there is for Masvidal. I don't think that he's interested in it. I think after Jorge's last fight with Kamaru, it was a bit of an eye-opener for him that that type of a belt was closed. I didn't want to bring it up with Jorge because I know it has been done to death already, but I didn't want to look past this fight in the interview. It wasn't really of interest to me to go, hey, what's next? What's going on? I want him to beat Colby. I don't care. I want him to beat Colby Covington. Normally, I don't have rooting interest. There are a couple fighters that I just root for that I, you know, have interviewed before that I like, and he is one of them. And if he wins, he sets himself up for a really big payday with either Diaz. He sets himself up for a future in the pro wrestling world, I believe, to a certain degree. It's kind of tough because it seems like his pro wrestling is really raw, and it.
Well, he's also very small by pro wrestling standards, right? Like the guys who successfully cross over tend to be light heavyweight and up, and he's 170. 170 is tiny for a wrestler.
Yeah, he's tiny for a wrestler, but I also think that he has the potential to fight Jake Paul. He could end up having a Paul brother fight. Jorge Masvidal.
That's what Jake Paul
this.
Wants.
Yeah, and if he wins this, I think that he puts himself into that category. If he loses it, I don't know if it's of interest to Jake. So, to me, the bigger thing for Jorge is, man, he said it in the interview, and this is why I respect him so much. He's been in the fight game since I was in university. I was watching him fight on YouTube in backyard brawls. This guy is a YouTube fighter who rose to the top of the class of the sport. He is literally, like, Game Bread is the nickname, but it is also the truth with this guy.
This will be his 51st pro MMA fight.
He is the truth. He deserves a payday. He deserves a big bag of money. He's already tested himself against Kamaru Usman. And you know what? He has nothing to be ashamed about. He went in on the first fight, and I'm not trying to be a stan here, really. I'm just saying that I really do respect it. The first fight he went into was short notice, and all Kamaru did was push him up against the fence and stomp his feet. And then guess what? He went out the next day, and he was dancing around and proving that those foot stomps didn't really do anything to him. The next fight was conclusive. It was. But I also thought that he prepared well for it and looked pretty good in the beginning phase of the fight. And he got knocked out cold. And guess what? He tipped the cap and acknowledged that in his life of fighting, that guy was the better of the fighters and that he showed him something that he didn't know he had. That's a respectful guy who knows the game. And so I really do hope that he gets this win, he gets the credit, and he starts to go and get paid. And what's unfortunate with the sport I love in the UFC, or the sport I love in mixed martial arts, I should say, but with the promoter of the UFC, is that this is what you have to root for with guys, is that they get their payday outside of the UFC, because it's hard to envision a scenario that doesn't financially benefit him, or that does financially benefit him in a way that outside of it does.
Yeah, a guy that sells fights as well, and this will be his 51st career fight, and like that... The idea that being the second best welterweight, let's say he goes down as the second best welterweight of this era, and Usman's 15-0 in the UFC. His only loss was when he was a kid against Jose Casares in his second fight. Like Usman is going to go down as one of the best pound for pound ever. So if you are the second or third best in that class in the Usman era, like there's nothing wrong with that. But for him to have to be looking ahead to a Jake Paul payday. Because, hey, you're 51 career fights and you're, 18 of them, 19, 20 of them in the UFC, and you haven't got that payday yet, it's a bit silly. Well, not a bit silly. It's very silly. On the Colby front, just if he does get the third shot, those two trilogies that I mentioned where someone came in 0-2, they got knocked out in both of them. You don't win the third one if you lost the first two.
Yeah, and I don't think he would. I really don't. Yeah. I don't think that there's a lot of options. Kamaru, if there are the comparables with GSP, where they are both, in my opinion, the two greatest welterweights, it's hard for me because I loved GSP so much that it's sometimes difficult for me to acknowledge Kamaru's greatness, but I have to acknowledge it. But the big similarity with the two of them and where you really do say, hey, yes, he has done it, is that both guys cleaned out the welterweight division to the point where you just went, what is he supposed to do?
Repeat title matches.
Yeah. I give it to GSP because, again, he ended up having the double belt. But, the two different weight classes. But, yeah, I got to say that it's just tough. This is the GSP problem. You go, who's left? And you go, we got to sign a guy. We got to go get Jake Shields from another organization because we just don't have anyone to fight this dude. So, that's how I see it playing out. Let's take a break. Let's come back. We shared our favorite storylines heading into the second half of the NBA season. Let's share our favorite storylines heading into the second half of the Raptors season. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Sports F59 of the Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar on the aux cord. You guys aren't privy to this, but like during breaks and stuff, Ailish will sing the songs. And just now, she was like headbanging to Despacito. If I had only taped the video of Ailish, you would have thought that like Slipknot was on or something because it was full headbanger.
She's got such a good beat.
Okay. Yeah. So it does have. For those of you on the podcast, thank you for listening to the podcast. Please follow the podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast. For those of you listening on radio, just follow the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, do those things. But yeah, the podcast audience can't hear the song. But so it's Despacito.
You know where they can hear the song, though?
Yes, they can. Mm-hmm. On Blake's Spotify, he'll share it later after the show. Ailish's Ox Score today, Earworms. Despacito is the number one white people think they have Latin flavor song ever. You know? Like, that course. Is, you want to see
Justin Bieber's in it.
You want to see some horrible dancing? Like, throw Despacito on in a bar late at night and let's see us whiteys move to it. Bad look. It's a tough look. If there was well-lit bars, it wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be good for us.
It topped Caress Me Down by Sublime as the white people try to sing Spanish lyrics anthem.
Yeah, it's true. By the way, I always talk about this. I think I might have even brought this up with Ailish before. So to me, Sublime was the music that older kids listened to at the skate park. So it's one of the coolest bands ever to me, right? Mm-hmm. It was one of the first, hey, wow, this is what older kids listen to. It's so cool. My buddy told me recently that younger people think Sublime is corny. And I went, pardon me? And apparently this is a thing. Ailish.
Oh, it sure, it's a thing.
It hurts me to learn this. And I went on, like, and I had 6 or 7 beers at this point. I did a staunch, angry defense of Sublime and went over the tracks and did the
I do not relate to that group of people, okay? Do not
the
group
youths
me
that
into
think
those
they're corny?
People.
Well, what I wanted to ask is, do you think Sublime is corny?
No, I just don't really think about Sublime at all. I'm just like,
folks, is worse than being corny.
Yeah. You think that's worse?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I think you are, like, I think, okay, you were cool among people who are 35 now, and then people who are 30 thought you were corny, and people who are 27 do not even give you the time, like, could not care less about you, could not think about you less. It's the old Don Draper thing we bring up fairly often, is like, there's nothing, the opposite of hate is not love. It's complete apathy.
Yeah. So for me, it's just the fact of, if you're Blake's and I's age, Sublime had multiple "these are your anthems in a bar" song. So these are just massive, massive songs that when they come on for our age group, it's... There was a time where they almost got played out where you went, oh, but now it's kind of come back around where if it gets played in a bar, everybody knows the words to every single lyric of the song. Mm-hmm. And they're foundational. When we first went to the bar, when we first started having fake IDs and getting in there, that's what we heard Santeria, you know? Yeah. That's part of the identity of this age group. And for you to say, I don't think about them at all, hurts. It hurts. It hurts.
Hey, it's been quite a few years since we were able to go to a bar and listen to music that might bring us back.
True.
So the physics of my brain
haven't been
tickled by older songs in a while, you know?
Tickled.
I think that there's a potential for me to have that, but I haven't been able to enjoy the perfect aura of listening to a song at a bar. Give me time.
So another thing we can do now is go to Raptors games. March 1st.
Hell yeah.
100% of us can go to the Raptors games. We can all just pack
the stadium. Well, that's not true. What? The stadium's still limited to 19,800 capacity. All of us can't go to the Raptors game. 100% of us can't go to the Raptors game.
All three of us can.
All three of us could, yes. Yeah. But so, I assume when you say the you're including the listeners. So
yes, that's true. Mm. Well, not all the listeners of the show could fit in. But the Raptors are back.
Tonight.
We're going to preview the game. We're going to preview tonight's game in the Wake and Rake when we look at the lines for tonight's game.
Yeah.
But I just want to ask you guys what you're most interested in down the stretch here, because I think there are a few really interesting things with the Raptors. I had a really tough time picking my favorite storyline or my most interesting storyline. Blake, I'm going to start with you on this one. I know you were with Will yesterday. I know you guys had a really great conversation. Everybody should go listen to it. It was very, very, very quality on the Raptors show. But what are you most looking forward to finding out or seeing, or what do you think you can find out, or what is the story that you are most interested in down the stretch run here, the second half of the Raptors season? The unofficial second half.
The final 25 games. It's really the final third. If we're going like raw time, they only got 25 games left. So there are a few, and there are a few like statistical anomalies or like, hey, could this guy push for this award? So I'm going to use Scottie Barnes specifically as the answer here. And obviously we talked a bunch, and we had Coach David Thorpe on and talked about, hey,
is there a bit of a wall here? And the answer is yes. He's played three times as many minutes already as he played last year. There's a component of when you're a rookie, teams start to get book on you and get tape on you and take away some of the things that are easy for you. Scotty Barnes had this remarkable start to the season. He was so far ahead of where we expected him to be as a scorer, and the playmaking's been cool, at least in transition. Some nights he's getting 6, 7, 8 assists. The thing that I am watching most closely with Scotty Barnes, out of interest and because I think it will dictate where this team can go and when, is do all the things that Scotty Barnes is showing start to impact winning down the stretch here? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Scotty Barnes has been bad or has hurt the team's winning, but in terms of on-off impact, he's 29th percentile in the league. He's not making a huge impact on what the Raptors are doing. That starting five has now played 300 minutes together. They're a dead even net rating during a stretch when the Raptors have been really good. And if you look at the component player pairs of like, hey, Fred VanVleet's on-off with Barnes, Siakam's on-off with Barnes, you go through the list, almost every player is a little worse in the Barnes minutes. And that's totally to be expected. He's a rookie. He's taking on this massive, massive workload in terms of minutes and responsibility at both ends. He's playing four different positions over the course of the game. It's all very understandable, but this team is not winning a playoff series without Scotty Barnes continuing to grow at kind of the rate we've seen this year. So I think that's the most interesting from a player development standpoint. I also think it's the biggest swing piece that we're going to see over these last 25 games. Is Scotty Barnes better in the middle of April than he is today? Because I don't think the Raptors win a playoff series without that.
So
maybe even with that.
It was absolutely in the mix for one of my favorite picks for what to watch. And in some ways, I look at it and say, well, it is actually what Blake just said is the most important thing, because that's the only real floor raiser for this core that you can make the case for really changing over the next year and a half. If you're not in team, eventually they're going to have to make a move of some significance to change the rosters to a certain degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would we agree with that?
Yeah.
Like, I think we kind of all agreed that the ceilings of OG, Siakam, and Fred are not going to demonstrably change. They could go up, but it's not going to be to a degree that Scotty Barnes is expected to. Well, that's pretty clear and obvious. I'm a big fan of Scotty Barnes. I think the Raptors made the right pick with Scotty Barnes now. But I also believe that his season now has been a little bit inflated by Raptors fans in terms of, on the whole, like, how good he is currently. And so when Blake brings up those numbers, I think it is very important contextually that he is having a very good by rookie standard season. But, you know, we talked to David Thorpe a couple weeks ago, and he said, oh, there's no such thing as a rookie wall. It's a wall for everybody. I respectfully disagree with someone who obviously knows more about the game than I do, just in the sense of it's a huge workload for him to take on. I understand it's a huge load for a lot of rookies, but yeah, Cade Cunningham's team, it doesn't matter if they win games every night. It matters if he takes a step in his development, works on his ball handling, takes shots, works on his shooting in tough games. It matters more for Scotty Barnes than any of the other top rookies, aside from the guy who is obviously the best rookie in Evan Mobley, right? Go down the list. Josh Giddey, who cares what he does in Oklahoma City this year? Don't care. Cade Cunningham, do not care. Franz Wagner, don't care. Jalen Suggs, don't care. Herbert Jones, don't care. Chris Duarte, don't care. None of these guys have any stakes that they're playing for the rest of the season. So what Scotty is going to have to do is exactly what Blake said, is can you find a way to impact this team in a way that goes beyond statistics and just saying, hey, Scotty Barnes looked good on that one play. Can he be a little bit more selective with some of the shots that he takes? Can he be a bit of more of a playmaker? Can he give them a bit more juice with secondary units? I think Scotty's second half is fascinating. Fascinating, fascinating, mm-hmm. fascinating. Ailish, or Blake, do you have a final thought on this before Ailish?
I was just going to say, to finish out your point about, like, Mobley's such a great comparison, because obviously they're 1-2. If you did the Rookie of the Year voting right now, Mobley wins probably unanimously. I think Scotty Barnes gets enough of the second votes
right now. It's between him and Giddey to me, but yeah.
And I mean, like, Franz Wagner's leading all rookies in points, and Cade has the stats. Like, it's going to be a competitive all rookie thing, but the thing that Mobley is doing, and it's, you know, the Cavs did a lot right this offseason, and they've had a lot break, and they've had a lot of guys develop,
Evan Mobley is the rookie of the year in large part because, hey, I mentioned Scotty's percentile rank in on-off stuff. Mobley's at 83rd percentile. It is almost never happens that a rookie impacts winning at this level. And that's not a fair bar to compare Scotty Barnes to, but it is a note that it's possible. And if you find the right fit, yeah.
Like
Mobley's just so good.
Well, okay, Mobley is so good that I think we're going to look back on this draft as oh my God, this guy went third draft.
Yeah, a Durant Odin.
Yeah, like, or Luka Doncic. Like, it's going to be the same kind of thing, right? Where we go, Marvin Bagley went ahead of Luka Doncic in 20 years. What?
Bagley killing our Cavs last night.
Bagley, sure. But yeah, I think that Mobley going third is going to look all-time bad, especially considering that, you know, Jalen Green went ahead of him. Woof. But he's so good that this is the most enjoyable rookie season in a very long time for the Raptors with Scotty Barnes, right? Like, you got to go back to VC. Like, who was a more enjoyable rookie for this team?
Yeah, like, maybe. I mean, I guess it depends because the answer is probably the guys who are found money, right? Like, when Norm comes through as an unexpected second-round pick. But the Raptors have never had, like, you'd have to go back to Vince and then before that Damon for the last rookie who, like, mattered this much to the Raptors as a rookie. Obviously, Chris Bosh, everyone saw the writing on the wall, and he hits that, you know, that three against Houston in the overtime game or whatever, and everyone's like, oh, my God, like, he can hit a clutch shot. But, a rookie hasn't mattered this much to the Raptors, I don't think, since Vince.
And yet, I still sometimes go, what would a trade have looked like to get up to get Mobley? I can't help it because he's that good.
What trade would have looked like is a lot of extra stuff going.
I know.
And it's those calls happened. Like that was not entirely impossible. And I think you and I think I even came on. I can't remember if it was Good Show or just your own.
Oh,
solo
it was Good
Show.
It was Good
but
Show.
Pre-draft, and, talking about hey, what would we give up to move up to number three? Because I think we were both. I know you said you had Mobley one, and I was at that point. I was like, it's 1A, 1B, K to Mobley. This is not a one and then a second tier.
I never had anybody close to Mobley. I had it as Mobley, and by the time the draft came around, I desperately wanted Mobley, and he was such a perfect. Could you imagine dropping Mobley into this Raptors team too? Cool. Like as good as Scotty Barnes has been, but you know that actually does change the. Well, what do you have to do with this team? And like he keeps all the defensive stuff of Barnes except for plus all the scoring with Barnes except for plus. Like there's nothing. What would you say Scotty does better? Ball handling? Like, I don't know. I just, like, that's probably it, but... Oof,
yeah, transition just, play, probably.
Yeah.
But, yeah, ooh, there's, like I mean, even just, like, Mobley's ability to pass or attack out of DHO and or triple handoffs and stuff like that. Sorry.
But you and I are just such Mobley guys that we've derailed this segment with how much we love Mobley.
What are you most excited about for the Raptors second half? Yes. Evan Mobley of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I'm not excited about Evan Mobley in terms of the Raptors second half. But, yeah, Scotty Barnes was definitely high up on my list while I was thinking about this last night. But I'll pick a different one. I think... mostly to see how Pascal can keep up this incredible pace for the rest of the season. You know, he's had some highs and lows in his career, but he's had such an awesome stretch for the last 20 games. You know, he's now playing at all-star, all-NBA levels. I think that just really will impact how maybe their off-season aggressiveness might be if he's this good. And if Fred is Fred, and if Scotty and OG can take some leaps next year, and Trent stays with the team, I think that they could be really, really scary and maybe just one piece away from like a legit contender. So Pascal actually being a number one guy and consistently sustaining that, I think for me is the most important or one of the most intriguing storylines for me in that second half.
For sure. And 27 games since he came back from his COVID absence, 23.7 points, 9.3 rebounds, 6.1 assists, 1.7 steals, 51% shooting, 39% on threes, 74% on
He's playing with so much more joy, and I know that's not a tangible stat
it's a real
in
thing.
Spreadsheets, but he looks so like he's found his groove, and I really hope he can continue that.
I have my spreadsheet has a column. It's a modifier.
Of
it's just size of smile, and it's a rating 1 to 5, like the concern index, but
it's
backwards.
It's been 5.
And, yeah.
So... I think both of your guys' answers are the correct ones. And yeah, it's subjective, but There's no player that can change this Raptors core ceiling more than Scotty, and there's more no player that needs to grow more than Scotty Barnes, and so his development over the second half of the season is huge. But there's also no player with more to prove when it comes to, well, do it in the playoffs and do it when it matters and sustain it than Siakam. Because Siakam's play over the last month and a half, 2 months, has been so extraordinarily good that you have to at least take it with a grain of salt given the way that he has played in the postseason, right? And I know, please don't bring up the Warriors and game one against Draymond and the playoffs, because yes, we know that as a second banana, he can have the odd game where he dominates next to Kawhi Leonard having the greatest playoff performance, next to Marc Gasol, one of the best, you know, playmaking bigs ever, next to Kyle Lowry, one of the greatest point guards in the last like 15 years. Yes, we understand that given those parameters, he can succeed. However, this is a new test for him. And if you go, who's the most interesting playoff guy? It's him by, you know, what's the most Raptors interesting story in the playoffs?
Not even Pascal close.
Siakam by a factor of 10 bazillion, right? Like, there's nobody even close. Nobody within a stratosphere of him. But for the second half, I want to see if he can sustain this. You're right, Ailish. Because if he does, he's going to be on an All-NBA team, okay?
Yeah.
He's going to have missed the All-Star game, and he's going to be a third-team All-NBA, and it's going to be pretty undeniable for him to do so. And if that ends up happening, I think that it actually does change a little bit of the urgency around your team. If he falters, he slows down. He looks more like the Siakam we saw for the first month of the season, or his first month, not when he was hurt. Then I do think it recalibrates your timeline a bit, because you need him to be a third All-NBA guy for you to make the case that the Raptors have some urgency this offseason. So, yeah.
Yeah, you need Siakam to be a top 15 guy. You need Fred to be a top 20, top 25 guy. Mm-hmm. And you need Scotty Barnes to show the growth throughout the course of the season
into those numbers.
Yes. Because look, I don't think any of these guys are ever going to be, you know, they're not on track to be a true number one, but there are only like 7 or 8 of those guys in basketball. There aren't 30. Every team doesn't have one. So yeah, to get to where you need to be, you need a top 15 guy and you need a top 25 guy, and you probably need 3 more top 50 to 60 type guys. Yeah, so that's a great pick, Ailish. I know we only have a minute left here. Do you have another one, JD?
Well, we actually don't even have a minute. We're up against the break, so I will say that I will reveal mine later in the show.
Ooh, stay tuned. Guys,
we got to take a break. Boom, boom, boom. We got to come back.
Yeah. No, it's not back. Bach on today. It's Poulin on today.
Yeah, it's goodness. we got to come back, and we got to talk to our buddy Luke Fox.